Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one and only Mod State Podcast. We've had a surge of listenership in the last 2 weeks, and wherever that came from, we truly appreciate it, and thanks for re-engaging. Hopefully, word of mouth, etc., or maybe it's just a re-emergence of people's political will and curiosity with the emerging 2020 election, but that's neither here nor there. My friend, how are you?
All right, discombobulated because of these whirlwind of events, and yeah, it's probably a certain degree of compassion fatigue that's going on, and now folks go, all right, well, let's do this thing.
Yeah, I mean, even for me, to be honest with you, probably October, November, December, early January, it was sort of this waiting game, like, okay, are we going to talk about the same thing? Are we just going to talk about Donald Trump over and over and over and over?
Well, that's what I feel compelled to guess that he would like.
That's very true. Well, before we launch into this Friday episode, although you might listen to this at a later date, of all the fits that make news and why it matters, we genuinely appreciate your listenership, whether that is foreign or domestic, on any platform that you are listening to. Of course, you've chosen the platform to listen to this podcast. Continue to do so, but as always, go over to modstate.com to find more op-ed and opinion pieces. There you'll find links to our social media and, of course, links to the podcast as well.
Yeah, it's about to get wild over there in the next 6 weeks.
Excellent, excellent. That's a good...
Yeah, through our three-year anniversary as a whole publication, editorial, it was the 30th of April, 2016. Obviously, the podcast was the end of June, 2017. But still, it's going to be a good little period here. It's about to get rather, not murky, but it's about to get complex.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah, and as always, it's... It's always nice to do a podcast when the sun's out, so I have a surge of energy here. So, and for all the fits that make news and why it matters, sort of roundup here, the two items that we will discuss today, one being the President of the United States' continual striking out or feud with the recently deceased Senator John McCain, which is super strange. And then
why would it be strange him fighting with a dead dude?
Why would that be strange?
Why? I mean, this individual fighting with somebody who's dead.
I
think it kind of fits in the greater narrative. Pantheon.
It just seems to be something that our president would do. But anyway, the second and probably more important and, of course, devastating, topic is the New Zealand mosque murders, essentially, terrorist act that we will talk about a bit. So let's just go ahead and launch right into the sort of ridiculous feud with the President of the United States and John McCain. On a more humorous note, I was on, I think it was Reddit or somewhere.
Because that's not funny enough.
Someone had sent something that said, seriously thinking about opening a Senator John McCain Twitter handle to tweet at the president to see if he takes the bait. To which I said, absolutely.
From the dad to haunt you.
So here's the thing, man. Like,
I'm still haunted by McCain Feingold.
Well, look, I feel like it's okay to be quote-unquote and non-superstitiously haunted by the actions of someone who is now deceased, as we know
I think it's okay to be pissed at a dead dude.
I think it's okay as well.
Just how far are you willing to go with
That's the thing, because as we know, that whether someone's living or dead, their actions in our life today can still be consequential. So I mean, we talk about people who are deceased all the time. However, to the level of consequence,
a lot of venom, yeah.
Yeah, the level of consequence that John McCain has inflicted, late Senator John McCain has inflicted on the President of the United States, to me is not worthy enough of him sitting in front of a crowd of people in Lordstown. Was it Lordstown, I believe? Wherever it was. It was in Ohio. A crowd of active duty military.
It was Lordstown.
Yeah, active duty military, contractors, etc., bashing a war hero, saying, man, I don't really like him, never got thanked for his funeral. You know, I threw that on. It just is one of those moments where, dude, what are you doing? Like, it is not, look, like I said, we can all not like people who have passed away. However, to be honest with you, it's different. It's kind of gross no matter who does it. However, when you hold the position of, again, of the most powerful man on planet Earth and to act as childish as he did, I realize that's his brand. I realize that's who he is.
However, yeah, this is in the same vein as the man who said to Secretary Mattis, "Nope, you're not taking any time. You're going to resign now."
But you see my point? Like,
oh, okay. I do.
And where's
at least it's consistent?
It's just grossly consistent. Like, whenever these things happen, I always have to question who he is, whether it's just his own personal stream of consciousness, or who he's actually pandering to, or who he is trying to get on his side, or because.
And you're praying to God you don't have to utter the sentence, and then where is he getting this from? Because that'd be really scary. Be like, oh, there's a source for this.
Yeah. It's, again, I feel like a situation like this has no political gain anywhere.
It has no merit on any level. I understand the senator single-handedly saved the Affordable Care Act. I get it. That puts him almost in the same level as Chief Justice John Roberts, who saved it not once but twice. I get it. There was some acrimony there. But come on, if nothing else, think of the Streisand effect. Don't pay this man more heed, more attention than absolutely necessary. Well, right now, there's no attention necessary. He's a dead senator.
Well, yeah, that's
what makes this really bizarre. So why are you giving this attention?
Yeah, because ultimately, the president, President Trump, wins nowhere with no one.
Okay, I can answer that, actually. I know why it's come up. You heard about the sourcing of the dossier, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, okay, I guess you can give the back. Again, it doesn't excuse the childish
We don't know anything for a fact about that whole damn thing yet.
Yeah, so go ahead and explain that real quick.
Well, long story short, we often wondered who the nameless Republican was who, along with the Democratic National Committee, had helped fund and bring about the exporting, if you will, it being something that went anywhere, of the Russian dossier on then-candidate Donald John Trump. Well, come to find out, it wasn't another Republican presidential candidate, as we'd long been led to believe. It was the late Senator John McCain. So that just, I know that's what reignited it, even though the president hasn't said that. He doesn't have to. Okay, all of a sudden for it to come back up.
Yeah, it's...
I get it. I comprehend it.
I do too. However...
just don't know. This isn't the way.
No, and, you know, there's been a couple... there just seems to be several different ways all of this could be handled. And for example,
there's nothing to see here. It's like, if there's nothing to see here, then why do you keep bringing it up? It's like you don't want to say anything about your buddy's gorgeous prom date who's got this huge zit, you know? But she keeps pointing it out at dinner, going, oh, this is just upsetting me. So everyone's talking about it.
You. Exactly. And, you know, it just doesn't play politically at all down the road. I mean, anyone can point to this down the road and really make the president look bad, even though, you know, it probably won't actually happen that way. But, you know, the other thing out of this is the president actually did something that I think he should have done a long time ago and just kept it at that and kept off Twitter, et cetera. And that's what he did in front of reporters on leaving the White House. They asked him about the Mueller report. He said, yeah, I think they should just release it, you know? Just go ahead and make it public. Just release it.
I agree. That was a perfect answer. It had to take him off guard.
And that's it. That's it. Just leave it at that. Because there's no measure. Like, I do believe for working for the federal government that there are enough checks and balances there in terms of process, procedure, and if anything is... in terms of like inspector general, et cetera, if you feel like something was done poorly or unethically after it's been done, then they will be able to flesh that out. So what I mean is the Mueller investigation is going to happen regardless. And
I'm so thrilled about that use of our federal taxpayer dollars.
But
regardless of what your dog is in this fight, it's like, all right, enough already. If y'all had a smoking gun, we'd know it. Get it over with.
Well, yeah, but I guess my point is that if he had, if he hadn't tweeted the way he did throughout the last 2 years, I just believe in the process by which we investigate, for the most part, especially at this high level, that they really are, like, he would have, if you truly believe that the investigation has overstepped its reach, it was going to happen regardless of the president being an asshole on Twitter or being crazy on Twitter. Or if you just had said, yep, let him do the investigation, we're cooperating, nothing to see here, but he'll release it when it's done. I feel like by doing what he has done, and this is why it matters, if he had done exactly what we had just proposed, had just said at the beginning, like, yep, we'll follow the investigation, we'll cooperate, no collusion here, and we'll release the report when it's all done. He could have spent so much more time focusing on the good things that he has done and expanded his base. I think... You
know, it's quite ironic. If he had handled this publicly the way that President Nixon handled Watergate, for example, and just said, look, some folks did some things they shouldn't have done. We're handling it. We're doing a thorough review and not said any more about it, you know, because Nixon didn't go on at length about it unless he was asked specifically by the media at a press conference. If he'd handled it that way, I honestly, and I know that's ironic, but I really don't think there would have been that much about it. Now, it begs the question, and you got to be very, very careful how you answer this, but could his tweets be used to constitute obstruction of justice? If so, that's a completely, we've crossed into new territory there, and it brings up a number of First mm-hmm. Amendment issues, because obviously, just because he's the president doesn't mean he doesn't have First Amendment rights.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I just think it's an interesting sort of retroactive study, if you will, of what potentially could have been of the...
In real time.
Yeah, because ultimately today, what may potentially hurt Donald Trump in 2020 is the fact that he has not expanded his base, and we're talking about like a few points here or there in terms of his favorability or his, because he could do something really, really good, and that week he has more favorability, right? But in terms of the true base that supports him, he's done nothing to foster that. Well, he certainly fostered that base, but he has really done nothing to grow that base over the last 2 years. If
it's
anything,
you say that because I think I brought this up to you in the last week. If not, I apologize. But it's well sourced. It's not Reuters. I forget. Regardless, he's expanded his base in one very critical area that. In two states that could very well be a difference maker, and that is with Hispanics under 40 in both Texas and Florida.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Now, Texas, the concern is quite high amongst young Hispanic Americans over the border issue. They actually are tending more and more to side with the president. And in Florida, it is largely due to Americans of Cuban descent who agree with him regarding his claims of socialism. So it's two different states, and it's technically two different echelons of people, but that's a very, it's a small thing. But
do you think, though, and this is completely hypothetical, that if he had not drawn so much attention to this, that he could have actually gone beyond those, whether it's well-sourced or not, these sort of two groups over one issue, right? Like actual growth of his support and favorability.
As opposed to eking out re-election, actually turn this into a blowout?
And maybe not blowout, but at least like, yes, I've done X, Y, and Z. Like just focus on the actual favorable good things that he's done in terms of criminal justice reform. It just goes, you know, it's like sort of the amount of energy
possibility.
It's well, there's what's a kind of like a karma proverb, whether or not you want to subscribe to that or not, but it's, you know, you put a lot of this energy, this like the black marbles into the garden hose or the fire hose. And the more you put in, you know, it takes a certain amount of time for that to get to the other end. But if you start dropping in, let's just say, yellow positive marbles or something like that, you still have this negativity. You still have the black marbles that are flowing out the other end, and it takes a while for the good stuff to flow through. So it's just the more you feed that, the more you witch hunt, the more you attack John McCain, the more you do these things, like that stuff doesn't go away, and it becomes really hard to... maybe in 2019, when he hits the campaign trail, to talk about all the positive things. Well,
I'm going to throw this out there.
What's that?
I don't know how much of a chakra believer the president is. Yeah, I don't know that he...
And I'm just using it really as an analogy in terms of like where...
No, you're absolutely right. I don't know how much of a believer he is in well, anything.
Well,
his evangelical, or the other,
evangelical base would disagree, man.
I'm sure they would. I'm quite confident that they would. I would point them to the interview in which he immediately deadpanned, "What do I have to ask forgiveness for?"
Yeah, he's a saved man.
But again, you know, he very well may be. It's called a prayer closet for a reason. But I can't verify this one way or the other. But also, let's remember, and I would say this to these same folks, remember not necessarily who you voted for, but what you voted for.
Mm-hmm.
You voted for a barn burner. You voted for a troll. And I don't know that he wants those conversations to go away, Nate.
Yeah. And
I think he lives for this cycle of drama.
And
I think he would be listless if it was all.
No, he is not the George Bush president, or he's not the.
No, thank God for that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess my point is like.
I don't miss him.
I don't either. But I would say more of a. Yes, you're absolutely. He enjoys the controversy, whereas someone else would have been in there just policy and doing what they needed to do. But anyway, enough of that. Let's move in now, as we're quickly destroying our time here.
Yes, but I'll leave people listeners with this, especially Americans. Are you not entertained?
Oh, God, no.
All you want is entertainment. Take all your favorite shows with you and all your devices. Well, I hope you're frickin' entertained.
Ugh.
We deserve Donald Trump.
Well, yeah. It's certainly,
anyway.
It's certainly a wake up in the blip of history. But so anyway, moving on to obviously something far more terrible and horrific would be the mosque shooting in New Zealand. And so the question then is, okay, why does this make all the fits that make news and why it matters? Why does this make the top list? And, you know, it's just, I think there's a significance to it and some potential outcomes from it that I think are worth talking about, whether or not we revisit this in 90 days and it really nothing came of it. However, I think the broader talk is the most interesting. And of course, you know, I've got family that lives in New Zealand and Australia. And it was to see their reaction to it, because it's equally horrific any place that it happens. But I will be honest, and it's a point of self-reflection for me, that because of the unfortunate frequency that it happens in the United States, my reaction to it is unfortunately different than maybe the first time it happened. And I realize that sounds horrible, and I should have the same gut-wrenching response every single time. But I'm sorry, it's just an unfortunate, weird normality in the United States to see this happen, and it's gut-wrenching every time, but it's like a numbing.
You're desensitized.
It's a desensitized, absolutely. But talking to...
I can't imagine why.
And talking to my family, it was so brand new and so unexpected, and just really the responses that they had and the questions and the feelings that they had was just so different from what you see in the United States. And to set the picture here of why it is so devastating in a place like New Zealand. So places like New Zealand and Australia, in terms of gun control, obviously the gun regulation, gun control in those, especially those two places, were never ingrained or instilled in their form of democracy or constitution. So the whole natural right and the constitutional right to bear arms just never really existed. And so it never developed in the fabric of their society the way it did in the United States. And for a good reason, the Founding Fathers had a very specific reason to include that constitution, or that the Second Amendment, whereas in New Zealand and Australia, they didn't have that same framework for their democracy and constitution as we did in terms of the past that we dealt with, or our Founding Fathers dealt with.
I mean, remember, Australia was dealing with being a former penal colony, so.
Penal. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's an insight into sort of gun culture. And gun culture does exist in these places. In fact, I think there's a statistic out there that after the Port Arthur massacre in Australia, gun ownership didn't drop, even though people had to turn in weapons and there was tighter regulation. Gun ownership didn't drop. I think it actually increased. But they put yeah. So interesting.
Okay, let's bear that in mind.
So, but when you look at a place like New Zealand, you see a lot of individuals in the United States, typically progressive or very liberal individuals, that see a world, the United States, without weapons, without guns, or have this sort of idea of what an incredibly regulated market that would be. And the reality is that is what New Zealand and Australia are.
So this is New Zealand, right? And the progressives, the left here, they didn't disappoint. They still found a way to bring Donald Trump into this.
Well, but they didn't have to. The reality is it was brought in by the shooter himself. The shooter referenced the president of the United States in his manifesto.
So do you believe Sirhan, when he blames Harvard and the CIA?
I mean, I don't know. It's a good question. I guess in this, I guess I'd have to dig into your reference.
He killed the Attorney General Robert Kennedy.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. I my mind's going
to. Okay. I mean, I'm grabbing it, I suppose, a straw here, but I'm going, okay, just because it came out of his mouth.
Well, I think it's his over.
Well, continue. Tell people what happened.
Well, I think, I was going to say,
shooting, like, what this man is.
I think there's a couple things, obviously, about him. He's from Australia and had, we don't really know much about him, which I think is another really good thing that the news media in New Zealand has done. Obviously, the manifesto's there, but in terms of, like, popularizing or memorializing this terrorist's name, I think they've done a good job of not doing that. And that's something we don't do very well here. And the gentleman, like shithead, wound up, you know, killing 50 plus people in New Zealand and in Muslim individuals at mosque, at prayer. And they found the manifesto, and the manifesto was deeply rooted in white supremacy and white race and, in broader terms, like, or not broader terms, but sort of the white, almost militaristic populism, and referenced the president of the United States as the person that's sort of resurrecting this movement and sort of the leader of it. So it didn't take it didn't really take a lot of effort or need of effort by any sort of group to point to the president and go, look, dude, you look what you're doing, and or look what you're a catalyst for, or look.
Do you believe that?
Look, it is hard for me. It is hard for me to. Okay, so for example, if the president of the United States at Charlottesville, after a white supremacist and lunatic rammed his car into a group of counter protesters, the president of the United States, hey, I think there's probably good people on both sides. Good people on both sides.
Well, you know, he wasn't talking about the person driving the car.
Yes, but who was the person driving the car was affiliated with the
well,
white.
Let me ask you this. Let's say, and I'm not defending what the president said, nor am I defending white supremacy.
No,
here.
it's a devil's advocate position.
Argument though, if there, let's say that there had been a protest, counter protest, and it had been a member of the Black Panther Party that drove over some folks. Do you think it would be nearly? Do you think it would be an issue to say that there's probably good people on both sides?
Well,
there's probably some good people that are members of the Black Panther Party, a well-known bigotrous group. I mean, Louis Farrakhan.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. What I think that would dominate that news headline would not be the fact that the president said there's good people on both sides. It would be trying to figure out why a Black Panther rammed a car into a group of protesters who are protesting white supremacy. That would be the story.
If you make both things fit, I'm saying if you change the narrative so that it was all a coalesced issue
Listen, at the end of the day, there's ways to handle things. And the way you handle that is you denounce a group that is specifically advocating for like ethnocentrism, right? And we should be doing that for any group, whether it's the Black Panther group vying for ethnocentricity of an all like dominating Black society, or if it's a white group that's advocating for an all-powerful white society. That's just not the way it works in 2019, and that's not the way it should work. So it is really quickly denouncing hateful, nationalistic, populist type rhetoric. That's just not. And I'm not denying the fact that there's a bunch of bullshit on both the right and the left. I'm not denouncing that at all. That's the reality. However, in that moment, there were not good people on both sides in that moment. There weren't all those guys running through Charlottesville with wicker candles, spewing the shit that they were doing.
I'm not endorsing that.
Yeah, those aren't good people. There isn't a good message there. And I think in the majority, I mean, yeah, it's all relative, right? If you believe that, you think it's a good message.
I hold the mainstream media and the faces, I don't want to say on the left because that wouldn't be fair either, but they know who they are that spew this kind of narrative. I hold them just as, if not more responsible.
John, let me ask you a hypothetical here.
Okay.
Let's say that the media, no one had this manifesto, right? And we really didn't know what was going on in the United States. And we stumbled upon this manifesto of this guy. And let's say that in two parallel universes, we found this manifesto. And in manifesto one, he referenced all the bullshit that he referenced and then said, I believe that President Obama is the, or well, let's just say the George Bush rather is the, it doesn't matter, Obama or Bush fits both scenarios, is the leader of the new white supremacy movement, and he's really sort of resurrecting this movement. We believe in him and his rhetoric.
Okay, I'll play along.
All right. So we don't really know what's going on in the United States. So we're gonna go, holy crap, who's this Obama or who's this Bush? Like let's go check this out. Okay. In Parallel Universe 2, we read the manifesto, and it's referencing Trump in the same way, just the actual original manifesto. And we're like, well, we don't really know what's going on in the United States. Let's go check it out. In your research, in our parallel universes, which one are we going to go, okay, I sort of see that. In which universe are you going to go, I don't really understand.
I see what you're driving at. One's provocateur, the others were not.
In the case of the presidency, in the case of the access to information we have today, and in the case of the just divisiveness that we have today.
Hold on. Goddamn dogs, my neighbors.
All right, the dog issue has been fixed. So my point here is that being that provocateur, like actually means something. It's not just a joke, and it doesn't matter.
It means something to us.
Look,
the disconnect is I don't think it means anything, and I don't mean this negative towards the president, but I don't think it means anything to him, and that I don't think that's his intent.
But that's the thing. If that's okay, and I realize he's not committing.
Well, intent does matter.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm not saying he's committing crimes, but intent does matter, especially when you're the president of the United States, and it is absolutely going to start raising.
You think he wants this sort of thing?
Yeah, but he's it.
No, I'm asking you.
Do you think he wants it? No, I don't think he wants that consequence. However, it is happening, and it. Again, I just kind of go back to those parallel universes. Like it'd be one thing. Like the world would look differently on that manifesto if it was like, I think Obama's bringing back white supremacy. I'm super glad for him. Like I'm encouraged by all of this, and now I'm going to be a martyr. Everyone would look at that and go, what is he talking about? Here today, you can draw the parallels. You can go to the tweets. You can go to the rhetoric. You can go to those things and go, yeah. I mean, it's a crazy leap to go shoot up a mosque. The president of the United States certainly doesn't want that. I don't for a second think that the president of the United States wishes that any of his language sent any white male to shoot a mosque. I'm not saying that at all. I absolutely don't think that's the case. And his, I think it was Mnuchin, was it, that came out, or Mulvaney came out and he said, I don't know how many times we have to say that the president is not a white supremacist.
Mike Mulvaney.
Yeah, it was Mulvaney.
And he's the acting chief of staff.
Yeah, and look, I agree with him. I'm like, I don't think the president really believes in something.
There's an element that wants him to be so that they can be right.
An element that wants that. But the fact is, the president only cares about the president and the president's brand and his family.
An element in the media that wants that, though.
Yes.
You know, let's come back to the media here, because again, I'm not playing devil's advocate for this group whatsoever, okay, or the shooter. So I want to be very clear on that.
Well, you're not supporting it at all.
At all. But I want to paint this picture for you in America, where young whites are told by certain elements that they are born racist, and it's pretty obvious they've got a point when they hear. Or when they say that, when Richard Spencer, for instance, says by diversity, you mean less white people, because after the election, 2016 election, there was a photo shown of the differences in the interns for the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The Republican Party was, yes, by and large, white. The Democrats were not. Yes, that enumerates that view. The diversity is less white people. I don't think it does. I think diversity doesn't mean less white people. You can change a percentage without changing the numbers. I think diversity means having more folks involved with the whites, okay? But they take this as a anti-white message. But follow along with me here to then economic woes for that same stratum, and then white flight being a bad thing. And I agree that it is economically, but again, you've got the Richard Spencers and to some degree the Alex Jones of the world who then say, okay, if you hate us, why can't we leave? Okay, this group has convinced itself that they're under attack, okay, in the same way that Adolf Hitler convinced Germans, that they're under attack because of the Treaty of Versailles. Whether they were or not is irrelevant. He convinced them of that. This group has now convinced themselves of this, that they are under attack. Of course, that fringe is desperate for a leader. I would just like to posit again that if the election of Donald John Trump to the presidency was about white supremacy, then why didn't David Duke get more than 3% of the Senate vote? I think those two things don't gel.
It's easy to get worked up over something. So, for example, the idea of you want less whites. Really, to me, that just goes to show, it really isn't diversity. It just goes to show like who that specific party seems to be working for more. And,
well, again, you got to think about what I said, though, that to me, this isn't just to me, mathematically, you can change the percentage of people in the room without reducing the count of any one group.
100%.
To me, diversity doesn't mean getting rid of the number of white people. It means bringing more people into the fold.
100%.
You're going to decrease the percentage of whites in the room without decreasing the number.
Yes.
And I think that's law somehow.
And that, my friend, is the direction that we need to go. To be honest with you, whatever person out there wants to subscribe my success, who clearly doesn't know my failings, wants to subscribe my success to my white privilege, I will say yes. There is an element of my overall success because of this quote-unquote white privilege. The privilege...
That's wonderful for you, okay? But greater whitedom didn't come in and prevent me from having my car repossessed.
100%. And this isn't going to be a white privilege conversation, but
not. I'm saying it's too easy.
Well, yeah. And like I said, the same people that would subscribe my success to my white privilege, obviously has never heard my absolute mistakes and failings, and really by no hand of like my family building me back up or anything. I mean, they obviously had unbelievable support, but It was all me.
I'm not by any means attempting to explain away white supremacists here. I'm simply doing what, Hillary Clinton and the media won't do, and actually attempting to, and I'm throwing her out there, but I'm attempting to at least, I hear you. I've actually taken the time to read what Richard Spencer has said. It's only a step up from reading Mein Kampf, simply because Richard Spencer doesn't repeat his hatred for Jews 40 pages in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not much.
Yeah.
It's much better.
Not much better. So anyway, we are rolling up on, we're about 10 minutes beyond schedule, if you will, on timeline. So this has been our second podcast and really the first entire podcast episode that's been dedicated to all the fits that make news and why it matters. And we will continue to hopefully make this a part of a podcast episode, or if not an entire podcast episode, hopefully once a week. And it just allows us to talk about some current event issues and tying in why it matters. We used to do the weekend, what was it? What do we call it? Goodness.
The weekend beat.
Not the weekend beat. The midweek wrap. That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
But instead of trying, I think these two topics specifically, we had been meaning to talk about for a while and have some broad reaching implications.
They got tired of hearing two crackers attempt to rap.
God. So, but as always, my friend, it's an honor and privilege to do this with you. And I'm glad we could sit down this afternoon to do it. And until next time,
au revoir.
See you.